Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All the crew had to wear aprons so that they couldn't tell who was a contestant and who was a member of the crew. So
decoy
it got
bakers.
Decoy bakers. It got all very silly.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a little bonus episode of The Bakedown. We've had so many fantastic questions and lovely comments from all our lovely listeners that we just had to do another episode to address all your questions. And frankly, you don't need much to convince us four to get together to have a little natter about baking. So here we are for an extra bonus episode of me, Sarah, Jane, Dan and Howard just nattering for a bit, which just feels quite cozy on a cold winter day. So here we are. Hi, guys. Welcome back.
Feels appropriate.
It does. Yeah.
It does.
This is lovely for us too. I'm chuffed to bits to be seeing you lot again. It makes my day.
Aww.
Yes. Well, I was expecting to see you all at Christmas, but we didn't expect to see you so soon. But no, it's a rare treat for us in the autumn and winter to do this. And I'm glad we got to do another one. And yeah. Is it appropriate for me to begin this podcast just by saying how incredibly bitter I am that the horse I backed didn't win Bake Off? You expected nothing less from me, I'm sure, or nothing more, perhaps. It's very sad that Bake Off is over, and I'm still a little bit gutted for poor old Josh that he didn't win. Matty obviously did a fantastic job. Big congratulations to Matty. But I'm gutted that I didn't manage to pick the winning horse this year. But then, none of us did, did we?
No, we didn't.
Howard and I weren't even close, frankly.
No. This is what worries me. Why are people asking us questions? We know nothing.
So on that note, let's get to your questions. Yes, we're just going to kick off with the questions. And we're going to address all the ones that we haven't managed to get to. So thank you so much, everybody, for everything you've said to us when you've written in. It's been fantastic to hear how much you love the podcast, how much you love listening to us all nattering. So here we go. Our first question. We have a question here from Stephanie from Savannah, who says, "Hello, bakers. This has certainly been a great season, although perhaps a challenge featuring wind chimes of biscuits would have livened things up a bit." Oh, Dan, that reminds me of your season very much.
Yeah.
Wind chimes made of biscuits.
Dreadful challenge. Go on. Sorry, Zach.
My question concerns the secrecy you had to adhere to when you were cast on the show. My understanding is that your nearest and dearest were permitted to know you were competing. I'm curious whether you had any close calls or instances where someone might have uncovered the truth. Perhaps you ran into a friend at the grocer's where your shopping cart contained several pounds of butter and flour. I could just imagine someone urging you to try out, never knowing you tried and succeeded. I'm just curious about any difficulties in this regard. Enjoying your lively banter, from Stephanie. Well, I love the picture Stephanie's painted there. And I'm imagining you all in the supermarket with your shopping trolleys. So, Howard, that reminds me of something you've often said about people wanting you to apply for Bake Off.
Yes. So I think as well as family members, close family members, not everybody, because they do a bit of filming of the kind of backstory of you kind of taking stuff into work or, you know, running in a park or whatever, people who you come into immediate contact with also sign confidentiality agreements. So as far as I remember anyway, so I think they're kind of bound by secrecy as well. But I do remember, you know, I've said before about having cut my thumb on the very first bake and went to a kind of local place to have it, not sewn up, but bandaged up again. And then when I got back to Sheffield, I went to the minor injuries unit and they said to me, how have you done this? And you think, oh, can I actually say I did it whilst filming Bake Off? Don't know. And I did, but probably shouldn't have. So, yeah.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
I'm going to get into trouble, aren't I?
Rip out a confidentiality agreement. And...
in the first week as well.
Yes.
I know, what a rebel.
I actually have a very similar story, which is it was just before week three on my season, I think, and I had a bad tummy. And I mentioned it on the group chat, just that I was a bit unwell. And the Love production team said, well, you need to go and get a doctor to check that you're okay to come down. I was like, oh, God, I should just keep my mouth shut. You know, it wasn't anything serious. And then the doctor was like, you know, this is a confidential space. Like, I understand that the TV production company is like trying to get me to drop the secret. And I was like, no, I can't say anything. But I think he sort of knew what was going on, and he sort of like kept talking about how anything you say to a doctor is confidential. And I'm like, I'm not falling for that. But it was fine. I was clear to compete. It was okay. Yeah.
Didn't you all have to get something signed by the doctor to say you were fit and healthy and okay to appear on the show? Anyway, I'm sure I did.
By a psychologist or a psychiatrist?
Oh no, we had to have yes.
But not a GP. I don't remember that. Not for me. Maybe it's because you were over 35 at the time, Jane.
Was I over 35? Cheeky.
I don't remember that. Maybe it did happen. I don't have a
I don't know. I don't remember actually having any really tricky moments. I think my daughter let slip at one point to her friends who knew her incredibly well. You know, I think she went very red and spluttered after she'd said something, and they went, your mum's on Bake Off, isn't she? But they all seemed to keep it quiet. But I don't think we had anything particularly awkward. But my year, somebody pointed out the other day, how many million, it was sort of, it had gone bonkers my year. People were, I think they flew out to Africa to doorstep Selassie's relatives or something. I mean, it was just ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And we'd got wind when we were filming. Oh, I'm going
to
get my...
Did you go to the doctors for that?
For the wind. No, we got wind that the sort of press were coming down to try and get pictures of the contestants, because of course nobody knew who we were, and we used to get smuggled out of the hotel with blankets over our head in the middle of the early morning, and then they thought they were on the hill. Somebody had spotted it, probably some poor walker, but somebody was on the hill, and it was like, oh, there's somebody over there. Right, all the crew had to wear aprons so that they couldn't tell who was a contestant and who was a member of the crew. So
decoy makers.
Decoy makers. It got
like
all very
Star
silly.
Wars.
Yeah.
What?
It got all very silly.
Star Wars Episode 1, where Keira Knightley is Natalie Portman's decoy.
Oh, I've never seen the prequels.
Jane knew what I meant. It's fine. Right.
Anyway, so yeah, there we go.
How bizarre. Oh,
well,
fantastic.
I was pretty good about keeping it quiet, actually. I think I told a few people that I was on the show, but then if anyone asked for details, I was like, no, I can't, you know, I can't tell you tell you that. You know, you have to wait and see it. And they were, but people just be like, did you win? Did you win? And I'm like, just don't even ask me.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you, Stephanie, for that fantastic question. And it's raised some utterly fantastic answers as well. It's a wonderful story. So thank you very much. Next question we have here is from Anna in Alabama. And Anna says, hi to Sarah, Jane, Howard and Dan. It's such a pleasure to have you all as part of my weekend routine of watching the new Bake Off episode and then tuning into the podcast afterwards. My question for you all is this. Botanicals Week returned to the tent this year. What other themes would you like to see revisited, or are there any themes not yet done that you think would be fun to watch?
That's a good one, isn't it?
I think the food team have done a very good job of exploring pretty much every category there is. So there's obviously sort of the time period stuff. There's various countries. There's lots of, for example, like each European country is sort of known for a particular fair or a tort or something, you know, so it might be fun to visit different European countries. But I think we've done such a wonderful job of offending almost every country we've done a country week for, haven't we? So I think maybe they're a little bit cautious. We still always have French week, don't we? I mean, that's
patisserie.
Standard.
Patisserie. Yeah. Oh, no,
French week.
It is French week, more or less. I don't know.
Every week's French week.
I quite liked Party Week this year. I thought
that was good.
Yeah, be happy to see that come back again.
I did like that. I like that too, because I was looking at stuff today on Instagram, as one does, and coming across all the Christmas stuff, and I thought, oh, a really lovely Christmas buffet, because Josh did a Christmas one, didn't he? That would be such fun. The problem is they do a Christmas special, so they probably wouldn't want to do a Christmas week, would they?
True.
But that's the other thing. Someone suggested to me, like, Halloween week or something, because it is filmed around, aired around Halloween time. So you could have, like, Halloween week, or you could have Valentine's week, or you could do things like that. But I don't know. I think they do a pretty good job. And I think, you know, we're just sort of coming up with anything. You know, everything's a bit of a stretch. No more vegan week, though, please. That was awful.
Well,
that was
that's interesting, actually, because I definitely thought there would have been a kind of free from week this year. But there wasn't, maybe. Was there? So, yeah.
Free from is quite hard. I mean, like, you're good at it, Howard, because you do it, because you become known for doing like gluten-free stuff. But for a regular person, if that's not the type of baking that you normally do, that's actually really hard. You sort of have to start from scratch and learn a whole new skill.
So I love the fact that I'm irregular. I'm not a regular person.
You know what I mean.
You're
not even gluten-free, are you? But because you have this reputation for gluten-free baking, it's sort of become one of your skills.
Did one on the program, and that's it. You get a reputation, don't you? But
you've got a book.
You did write a book, Howard.
Yes, you did.
But I'd love to see a gluten-free one, because I'm not celiac, but it's been worked out this summer that I am now gluten intolerant. And let me tell you, I had a bag of oats the other day that I assumed were gluten-free and were not. And I knew about it, which was very annoying. So I would like a completely gluten-free week, because it is a real challenge. And I'm struggling with gluten-free pastry, because I love pastry and I love sausage rolls. And with Christmas coming along, I want some nice, I don't want to miss out on those treats. Cakes are easy. Gluten-free cakes, I think, are pretty easy. Most cakes work if you're careful with your mix. But the pastries are bread. Oh, don't ask me. I cannot make gluten-free bread, but a type of gluten-free, what do you call it, crisp bread to go with Christmas with lots of seeds and nuts and things. And so I think a gluten-free week would be good, because more and more people are gluten intolerant. A lot of people choose
intolerant,
not to eat. And there's been quite a bit in the news recently about people who are celiac. And, I mean, you know, for me, if I eat some gluten, well, tough. I'll survive. But people who are celiac, really, it is very, very, very dangerous. My dad was celiac and wasn't diagnosed until he was 89, actually, poor old devil.
Wow.
But you can become gluten intolerant and celiac at any age. So I think I'd really love to see a gluten-free, and then maybe we'd have some more gluten-free stuff in the shops, or or people would be better at baking it rather than resorting to the awful, some of the awful, awful bread and things that you can get in the supermarket.
I find I'm less able to eat wheat as I get older as well. Howard, you've written the book. What do you do for pastry?
Sweet pastry is really quite straightforward.
What do you do?
If you use icing sugar and egg whites, you can create enough kind of protein.
That's royal icing, Howard.
No, I'm recipe. Obviously putting flour and butter in there as well. I'm not. Okay. I'm just mixing egg whites with...
Look, yeah, pastry.
It's pastry. This is glue. But savoury pastry, I tend to use cheese to kind of bind it together. So put some Parmesan or some cheddar or whatever in there. That helps to improve the binding of it.
Probably doesn't hurt the flavour either.
No, exactly.
Ooh, that's lovely. Yeah. And how about a puff?
Puff? Not as easy, no.
Howard's brow has never looked so furrowed.
I suppose once you've got a kind of short crust that you are reasonably happy with, you can use that as the carrier for your butter. But it's not something I particularly am. There's no puff pastry actually in the book, and I suppose if I were to write a second one, I would attempt it. But it's not something I've done successfully.
Well, I'm going to give it a go, I will let you know.
Excellent. Right, so gluten-free week and potentially some more holiday weeks. Because I like the idea of party food week as well, because it doesn't necessarily cover one type of cuisine. It's just, it can be quite open, brief. I mean, caterpillar cake was inspired, so maybe we'll see more of that.
And how about wind chime biscuit week? Yeah, perfect.
And wind chime biscuit week, exactly. Yeah. thank you so much, Anna, for that question. And moving on to the next question, we have a question from Sally, who hasn't said where she's from, but hello, Sally, nonetheless. Sally says, hello, love the podcast. It's a highlight of my week. Are the beautiful drawings of the baker's signature and showstopper bakes drawn before the items are baked or after?
Well, I don't know really. I'm assuming
after.
I'm assuming after, but I really don't know.
I have experience of the drawings were I assume are created afterwards, but I have had experiences of drawings seemingly being based on the practice bake that I took a picture of, and I've also had drawings that have seemed to have been based upon what I actually produced in the tent. So I don't know. I'm assuming that Love Productions team just give the artist a picture and say, draw that, you know, and I think maybe they give them a different picture depending on, you know, like one of my practice bakes had a load more decoration on it, but I didn't manage to make any of that decoration in the tent. And the picture that they drew was of the bake with less decoration. So I'm assuming they must have shown them a picture of what I actually made. So they must have drawn them afterwards, but I don't know as to what they're basing the drawing on. It depends on how many versions of it you've made, I guess.
I think it's probably changed over the years, actually. I think if you look back at earlier series, including mine, the drawings reflect the bake, the finished bake, whereas I think in later series, you get a kind of idealised version of what it was supposed to look like, and then sometimes it doesn't quite match that. So I remember when I did the Christmas special, one of my bakes I didn't manage to finish, and they asked me to just send a shot or a drawing of what it was supposed to look like, and the finished drawing was based on that rather than the horrible thing that I'd produced on the day.
I don't remember you making anything horrible. What did you make?
Never.
There were some mini Stollen cakes, and they were supposed to have little pots of clementine curd at the side and a little bit of candied grapefruit or orange or something on top. And they didn't have either, so they just looked like these little bear sausages. So that's why they thought oh, let's just give him an opportunity to show us what it should have looked like.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
So this is the fantastic Tom Hovey, for those of you who don't know who he is. He is a fantastic artist. But he has a website if anybody wants to look up his lovely drawings. He has been drawing the Bakes since the very beginning. And if you go back to early seasons, you'll see his design and his artwork. And it really does make it feel like Bake Off once you see those drawings, you know, in that same style each year. It's really, really lovely to see. And you can actually buy some of the drawings. If anybody wants to visit his online shop, you can buy a handful of them.
Well, I was about to say that, but only the line drawings. So the full coloured in versions that they use on the show, you can't buy those. I'm assuming that Love Productions have bought the rights to those, you know, so he can't sell them. But it's annoying. I have all the line drawings of my Bakes, but I do wish I had them in colour, but I guess he's not legally allowed to sell them, which is a bit of a shame.
I wonder whether the colour's added kind of digitally.
Maybe.
By the production team.
Yeah. However, if you buy, a couple of years ago, I bought a Bread Lion picture for my mum, which is hanging up in their kitchen, my mum and dad's kitchen. And with it came a little mini postcard of the coloured-in Bread Lion.
Oh,
so I do have that one. Yay! So do you all have line drawings of your Bakes? And did you buy them or were they gifted?
I bought the ones that I have good memories associated with. So I bought some of my line drawings.
You have some of them.
Yeah.
I think I've got line drawings. Well, I know I've got line drawings of, as Dan says, the ones that I really liked. And then I'm sure Tom Hovey shoved in an extra couple because I thought, oh, that's really sweet, but maybe it's just because nobody would ever want to buy that.
Oh, that's not true.
No.
I never did get around to buying one.
Did you?
But I know Richard Bird redid his kitchen roughly the same time as we ran the marathon, so probably about 2018. And he has he had 10 beautifully lined up on his kitchen wall, which I think looked lovely, and I was always a bit jealous.
I also bought the Great British Bake Off colouring book, which has got Tom Hovey's illustrations that you can colour in.
Oh, that's nice.
I have six on my kitchen wall of the nice. six that I have nice memories of. But I think they were only about £10 each, Jane. I don't think they were that expensive.
I thought they were £100 each.
Oh, no.
No, God, no.
Didn't pay that.
Maybe I'll buy some then.
By the time I'd framed them all, it did get a little bit more expensive. But no, the actual line drawings, I think they're about £10 from memory, Jane. Why don't you try writing to Tom Hovey and saying, you may remember me, international celebrity chef, Jane Beadle.
Who?
Well, thank you so much, Sally, for that question. And if anybody wants to look up Tom Hovey's prints and maybe purchase a few of them, then you can find him on Google. We have another question here from Angus. Hello, Angus. Don't know where Angus is writing in from, but hello. It says, hello, Sarah and all. You guys are all.
We are the least important ones. Yeah.
Not exactly. Obviously.
Is that all really?
Don't you forget it.
Who publishes this podcast? I do. Yes, thank you. Angus says, I just wanted to drop you a line to ask about the technical in Dessert Week. Now, this was the steamed sponge puddings.
Oh, yeah. I think we've already said quite a lot about this.
I'll be really interested to hear what you all think went wrong. I can't help but think that when all the contestants fail so spectacularly, there must be something wrong with the challenge itself. Was it something wrong with the instructions or that they weren't given enough time?
Well, I think what honestly happened was they didn't know how long to bake them for.
Yeah.
I think that was it. I mean, on some level, the thing is it, look, at the end of the day, it's a TV show. And so whether things go very well or very badly, it still makes good television. And like the fact that people are talking about it and you've written in a question about it suggests that as a TV moment, it was quite successful. It depends what you want to see, though. I think in some shows, we want to see people doing a good job. And in other times, we enjoy the schadenfreude of seeing people fail spectacularly. Personally, I don't want to see people fail spectacularly on Bake Off. I don't find that comfortable viewing. I don't want, that's not the kind of TV I want to watch. But I mean, what do you think, Jane? Jane and Howard very smugly said that he would have known how long to bake these for, I remember, but I wouldn't have known.
Well, I think what we said was we would have steamed them and not in the oven. Mm. I have never tried a steamed pudding in an oven. It sort of, for me, defeats the object, no. Really. I cover each one in a pleated piece of greaseproof and then a piece of foil over the top and put an elastic band or some string around each one, even in the little mini puddings. And
so old-fashioned.
Well, there we go. Is it? What would you use? You don't even make steamed puddings, I seem to remember.
I have a lidded basin. Do you not have a lidded basin?
Yeah, you can do. Yeah.
Oh, you can. I've got a lidded basin for a family size one, but not for the little individual.
Not the little individual ones.
And then I'd get a big wide bottom pan that's big enough to take them all. I'll put an upside down plate or a trivet in it so it keeps the pudding basin off the actual base of the pans so that they don't get the direct heat. And put some water in, make sure it doesn't run dry, put a lid on and steam them for the mini ones 60 minutes or 90 minutes if you do a family size one. And I would always do it like that. I just think it, at least you know it's getting steamed and cooked, whereas in the oven.
My big ones take 2 or 3 hours, I thought. Maybe I'm over baking them. I don't know. Won't take a long time. Or I'm thinking of Christmas pudding. Christmas pudding
takes
a long time.
You're probably thinking Christmas pudding, they take forever, you know, all day to cook a Christmas pudding. But a steamed pudding should only take family size one, about 90 minutes.
Okay.
But I've never done one in the oven. And I think it would have been nice to have perhaps let them decide how they were going to steam them. That would have been funny because none of them had a clue.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually.
You know, choose how you steam these puddings. Maybe what went wrong was they didn't use boiling hot water in there, so the steam didn't get going. But, you know, if it takes 60 minutes on the hob, it's going to take 60 minutes in the oven with plenty of steam.
I think it was a bit of a faffy recipe as well. I mean, to make your own golden syrup or whatever I do mind like Jane does. The only difference is I don't tend to use a trivet or a saucer in the bottom. I use a large cookie cutter, but that works. Yeah, a metal cookie. Yeah,
something to get it off the
just
base,
rests
isn't it, really?
It on. Yeah.
See, I follow my mother. My mother would take, you know, the oldest, grottiest, most chipped plate saucer and turn it upside down, and that's what I would use. Yeah.
Just your mother and me, then. So, so I don't know. It's a shame. I think the problem was we had a very young group of bakers this year. Half of them were under 30.
So young.
And perhaps
infants.
A steamed pudding. Yes, children. Well, they're all younger than my children. I think it's just not a fashionable thing to do a steamed pudding these days. Ooh. They would have all have looked on Instagram at wonderful entremets and fantastic chocolate sculptures and fancy ways of making edible Christmas trees out of ice cream cones and various things, but they probably haven't seen a steamed pudding. And I like that about this series. There are a lot of traditional bakes and traditional skills, and it was interesting to see how they coped.
That's true, because the steam pudding might be delicious, but it's not sort of Instagram worthy, is it? It's not going to get you lots of hearts on Instagram turning out a steam pudding, delicious as it may be.
No, it is. I put one up a couple of Christmases ago, and I didn't think I got very many likes on that one.
or when you make a beautifully steamed suet pudding and you turn it out and you think it's beautiful and it's going to taste delicious and it's just this brown lump.
It is, it doesn't
look exactly.
You're talking about a spotted dick. Yes, there we go. Which always amuses American friends of ours. They think it's hilarious.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much, Angus, for that question. Now, we have another question here from Erica in Boston, who says, "Dear Bake Down Podcast, is there a reason besides tradition that the Great British Bake Off needs to be filmed in a tent? We've seen so many issues with the chocolate not tempering in extreme heat and bread not rising on cold days. But more seriously, contestants are actually getting sick from overheating. Yes, obviously, we've seen that a couple of times. And I think Tasha had a migraine this year that it was possibly down to the heat in the tent. She says, I understand that air conditioning isn't possible in the tent because of the noise. But as summers get longer and hotter with climate change, what's your opinion about whether Bake Off should be moved into a climate controlled studio? Mm-hmm. And if so, would it be the same?
No.
I like this question.
You're just amusing me.
I mean, I have very strong opinions about what Bake Off is and what Bake Off should be and the sort of what makes it special and what makes it iconic. And I think the tent is an absolutely enormous part of that. And yes, they can change it, but why? Why would they do that? And the thing is, at the end of the day, one thing that makes Bake Off special, in my opinion, is there is genuinely amateur bakers who are not producing the highest level patisserie, you know, or if they do, it's sort of a rare and special feat. It is about amateur bakers and baking in a less than perfect environment. It's not about who is the most incredible pastry chef in the UK. That's not what the show is, in my opinion.
No,
apart from
I agree.
You, Jay, you are the most incredible pastry chef in the UK.
No, I totally agree with Dan. I think the reason it was in a tent probably initially was it's a great old British tradition of fetes and tea tents and bunting and all that stuff. So quintessentially British. And we all love the tent. And if it moved it inside, it would just be like MasterChef or something like that. And
or The Professionals.
Or The Professionals. Well, yeah, maybe not The Professionals. But I think it is unfortunate when it gets terribly hot. And Lord knows what we're going to do when the climate carries on going completely bonkers, as it currently appears to be. But they could move it a little bit earlier, or they could move it a little bit later in the year. Whether that would help or not with the heat, I don't know. But you learn to cope with most things. I think it's just those very, very hot days that they were all having sort of damp towels around the backs of their necks. But if it gets to the stage where you really can't bake in a tent because it's too hot, then perhaps that's time for Bake Off to come to an end, because it wouldn't be Bake Off.
Mm. No. They're better to not do it at all.
I think one of the reasons why it was initially in the tent as well was because in the very, very first series, they were moving round the country, weren't they? So they went, each episode was filmed in a different part of the country.
Yes, it did move.
So it had that kind of movable feast kind of thing. But no, I think if we coped with it, I don't see why anybody else should get an easier ride, really.
Yeah. We're pulling the ladder up behind us.
Yeah. I think from the start, she wasn't well. From the first interview, she sounded very fragile. And I think she'd had a migraine the night before. Whether that was caused by the heat in the hotel or I don't think it was the heat in the tent that day. I think she was feeling poorly before they started.
Fair enough. Yes.
I would have hoped that. I would have hoped if the temperature gets to the point where it's dangerous, then health and safety would kick in and everybody would have to go home.
Well, we're very health and safety conscious in the UK. So if something isn't right, then, you know, it's not going to happen.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So definitely we think we're going to lose the essence of Bake Off if we don't have the tent. So rather stop Bake Off altogether than move it inside. So.
Bake Off will end one day. And I think if we get to the point where we're like, we're going to get rid of the Bake Off tent, you're like, is it the same program? I don't think it is.
No,
I really don't think it would be the same program. Sorry.
I definitely agree. And, you know, hopefully it will go on attracting viewers and therefore be entertaining. Be entertaining and attract viewers, whichever way, chicken and egg. But, yes, 14 series. And they're advertising for series 15. So that's a long time for a series to go on, I think, and still be successful. Should have stopped after my series and then I'd have been queen number two.
You'd have been the most famous. Yeah, you would. Jane's, the finale that Janewood is in is still the most popular, most watched episode ever. And Jane will not miss an opportunity to remind us of what a major Bake Off star she is.
It's my only claim to fame. And you're just bitter. You're just bitter, Deb.
That's my whole personality. Of course I'm bitter.
Let's carry on with the questions. We have a question here from Richard in Palm Springs in California.
Ooh,
and he's... Oh, then it is here.
Oh, yes. They couldn't do a Bake Off at a tent there, could they?
Oh, no. Goodness me. Richard says, hello. Just a note to say how much I'm enjoying another series of The Bake Down. It's like visiting old friends. Oh, you guys, are so nice with all your lovely comments. He said, two things I wish Love Productions would do. One, include a few scenes of the bakers interacting with each other. They always seem to have such good camaraderie that it would be fun to see that on screen. And two, bring more bakers back for additional specials.
Yes.
Agreed.
Full reunions would be difficult, but smaller gatherings would be nice. And he does say, I guess it's a lot of work to put these things on. So what do we think about those things? More interaction between the bakers that we see and more reunions.
I think it would be lovely. I think you could even have an extra episode at the end of each series where you see some of the kind of what's going on behind the scene. I think it'd be quite interesting.
Yes, that was good idea, Hal, because I was going to say it wouldn't be possible because actually we never stop in the 2 days that we're filming, but there would be outtakes. But then would they film us in the green room? I'm not sure I want people...
Oh, no thanks.
I'm not sure I want people saying what we've got up to.
Why, Jane?
Well, no, but, you know...
That's a safe space.
Yes. And, you know, they started filming us in there. You know, they don't see what we get up to in there. And to be honest, we played board games and sang songs, or allegedly sang songs, anyway, because none of us could sing apart from Andrew. But... Yeah, I don't know. They'd just have to do some outtakes, wouldn't they, of us sitting outside where there are cameras. But I wouldn't want them to... I mean, we're mic'd up all day. They can hear us all day.
Yeah.
I mean, it is lovely the way we all get on, and we do. It's a very happy place to be, and I think we're all still in touch with people that we run the series with. Certainly I am. Yeah, so maybe some more outtakes in the tent where they've got the filming anyway and put together an extra episode. I think that's quite a nice idea, Howard, actually.
There were some lovely things on social media at the end of after the final, weren't there? Where they were playing cricket and things like that at the final, and it'd be quite nice to see a bit more of that, I think.
Well, it looks as though they did more of it than we did. We sort of got shuffled into the tent, shuffled out of the tent, back to the hotel, and things. And it looks a lot more. There's a lot more filming of social things that go on now. Which is lovely, I think.
Do we think this is as social media gets more and more relevant? Because maybe. Social media wasn't, I'm not saying it didn't exist, but it wasn't as relevant. It wasn't, you know, and then they post, Bake Off's account posts so much now. They post so much behind the scenes. There was a lovely video of Tasha giving all the bakers sign names.
Which is really nice.
All that sort of stuff. So they need to film more for social media.
Yes,
because it was still quite in its infancy. There were very few of us most of us got our Instagram accounts when we went on to Bake Off. Whereas I think currently probably everybody's got Instagram accounts before they even consider going on Bake Off. So
I don't think Instagram existed when I was on.
Maybe not.
No, Twitter was there, but
I'm going to look it up.
When did Instagram start?
There was definitely Instagram before 2018 when I went on. I didn't have Instagram. Kim Joy already had 3,000 followers when we started Bake Off, and we were all impressed by that. 3,000 followers. Wow. So many.
Well, Howard, in December 2010, Instagram had 1 million registrations.
Wow,
and
fairly is that.
In January 2011, Instagram added the hashtag to, you know, help people find relevant photographs. So yes, it was still quite new.
Yeah.
It was still quite new.
So there you go, bit of history, children. We like a bit of history.
What was the other bit of the question? Was there another bit of that question?
Reunions, like you're having little reunions.
Nice.
An extra series with Bake Off people coming back.
So a lot of people sort of drop out of the baking, don't they? It's hard work keeping Instagram going, and I must admit I'm not doing much of it at the moment. But it would be lovely to have series with some of us oldies, you know, oldies but hopefully goodies, would be lovely. I mean, I would love to bake with you guys in the tent. That would be really special.
Yeah. That would be special. That would be special.
Yeah.
So, you know, perhaps...
But you'd beat us, wouldn't you?
Jane would.
Yeah, of course I would.
That's why Jane wants to go back. I would like to bake with you two. She's confident
she can beat us. Yeah. And who else could I bake with? I could just win.
Not Andrew. Anyway, Andrew would be a worthy adversary.
Don't forget, I was on the Christmas special with him.
Yeah,
I know you beat him there. We all know, James. I saw you guys giving each other dirty looks. Yeah,
but it would be lovely. Lovely, I think.
It would be, but I think the thing is, like, sometimes people do the show, and as Jane said, like, I did Instagram, like, a lot for a bit and worked at it and did bits and pieces, and then I sort of drifted out of it, and, you know, you have other priorities in life, and, you know, the Bake Off will always be a time and a place for us, you know, and you can't walk in the same river twice, so, you can't really go back and do it again. I think some people, it would be different for them to go back. Going back for a Christmas special is one thing. Okay, if you go back for like a season, if there was like an All-Stars season, if you like, then it would be difficult for people. I think because if people, for example, did very well on their first trip in the tent, there's a lot of jeopardy going back in that you could like ruin your reputation if you went home in the first week or whatever. Or even worse, maybe, if you were someone who went out early and then you went back into the tent and then went home early again, that would be even more devastating. So I think it sort of comes with it comes with a jeopardy that I think might be unappealing to some people, especially if the public really liked them the first time or whatever. I think there's the potential that it could sour an experience that was already lovely. Or do you think I'm being overly depressing about
it? They did an Australian MasterChef series a couple of years ago. I love Australian MasterChef. And for people who had got down to, I can't remember, the last 16 in previous series, so people who were very well known and had careers in the industry, were invited back for a series. So there were lots of familiar faces there, lots of people you loved or hated, and very, very good chefs coming in competing against each other. And I thought that was lovely, and it went down very, very well, certainly with the Australian audience who knew and loved these people. And I think you could do that, you know, with people who you knew and loved, not humiliate some of the bakers that they've had on who perhaps didn't get through week one, who proved themselves not to be necessarily the most competent, but people who had made the halfway mark, maybe. Who were good bakers and then just
good choice of words, Jane. Good choice of words. Yep.
Well, that's an interesting one. You could actually have people who went out at the same point, couldn't you? And then
Howard, yeah.
So all the week sixes together in one.
Exactly. Perfect.
Yes, You could all the all finalists.
Yeah.
All right, Jane.
Didn't quite make, I think it would be quite nice. It gives people a warm and fuzzy feeling, and there wouldn't be that much casting to do, would there? So, Love Productions, it would save you on your setup costs.
It would save you time. Yeah, lovely.
There's a thought.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Richard, for those questions. We have a couple more before we're going to bring this episode to a close. But thank you so much, everybody, who's sent in your questions. And don't forget, we do have our festive episodes to record. So make sure you send in your questions ready for that. This question is from Mary Kay, who is in Minnesota. And Mary Kay says she is a devoted listener. So thank you very much for that. She says, recently I was watching an old episode of Baking with Julia Child. She and a guest baker were making puff pastry, and the guest said he uses pastry flour. I've never heard of pastry flour, but after a brief internet search, I found out it's a low-gluten flour, similar to cake flour. I also found a recipe for homemade pastry flour, which calls for all-purpose flour and cake flour combined. Have any of you used pastry flour before?
I just use, so we have plain flour in the UK. It's just called plain flour, which is almost the same as all-purpose flour. It's apparently slightly lower protein content. And I use that for everything. I don't even use sponge flour is the thing in the UK, which I'm assuming is the same as cake flour in America. I don't even use that.
Sponge flour over here, I think, has already got raising agent in it. I believe so. Whereas cake flour, we don't really get cake flour, I don't think, here. And I know when you're reading some of the American recipes, Sally's Baking Addiction, naming one.
You love that website, don't you?
I do. Yeah, I think she's lovely. You take out a couple of tablespoons or however much of flour and put in some corn flour, which we know doesn't have any gluten, or cornstarch, guys, for those of you in the US, that doesn't have any gluten in it, to reduce the gluten. But in the UK, we just crack on with ordinary, all-purpose, plain flour, don't we?
It's just not a tradition we have.
I mean, there are some benefits. When you're doing a pastry, sometimes to using a bread flour if you want, a bit of extra crispness or whatever. Puff pastry, I usually use bread flour for, but no.
I think when I make croissant, I use a mixture of bread flour and plain flour. I think that's what I do. So we do some adaptations, but no, pastry flour isn't something I even remember seeing on a shelf.
No.
I don't think we get it here. So
what about pasta flour?
Oh, that's a thing. Yeah, that isn't that just finely ground though? Is that what that is?
That's double O, isn't it?
Double O, yeah.
Double O. I'm not. Is that a lower gluten for pasta flour? I'm not sure that it is. I don't know.
I think that's pretty high gluten as well, isn't it?
I think so.
Look at us. We know so much about flour.
Well, no, it's great that you guys ask these questions, because obviously it's there are so many differences between baking in the States and baking in the UK, stuff that you guys have never thought of, stuff we've never thought of. And it's so lovely to compare the baking within our two countries, because even though we do speak the same language, we are reasonably far away and we are completely different countries. We're foreign countries to each other. So
you could be kind, Sarah, and let us see the questions before the podcast.
Yeah.
Rather than dropping us in.
Where's your spontaneity, Howard?
Well, according to a preliminary Google, it seems to suggest that the 00 is just very finely ground, so maybe gives it a smoother texture. I think. Because you want your pasta nice and smooth, don't you?
You do. Yeah. And it also has got, apparently you can get it in different strengths, but it says you can buy it. I'm not sure that you can here. I'm sure you can in the world. Between a 7% and 14% gluten, apparently. Oh. So there are different types of 00. I don't think that's the same as cake flour or pastry flour.
No.
No. Well, according to something else, I was looking at the replacements, substitutions rather. If you don't have 00, replace it with plain flour for cakes and replace it with bread flour in sort of bread, pizza and pasta. So,
okay.
Maybe it's just the fineness that the 00 described and not actually the strength of the protein. I don't think we know. You've stumbled upon an area which is not our expertise, I'm afraid.
Well done, Mary Kay. Well done.
We still managed to talk about it, though.
Yeah. Oh, God, not knowing stuff doesn't stop us talking about it,
right? No. Indeed.
Well, thank you very much, Mary Kay, for that. And I hope you enjoy baking with pastry flour. Lovely. And we have our final question here from Erin. Now, hello, Erin. Erin says, hello, Sarah and team. I like the way that I'm first.
Yeah.
You three are behind me.
Sarah.
Keep saying this, guys. Keep writing into me. Thank you for the podcast, which enhances the bake-off experience each season. I have a few questions I hope you will consider. Question one, how do you prepare to comment on the bakes each week? I love this thing. Sarah, in particular, seems to have a comprehensive list of the bakers, their bakes, ingredients, and judges' comments. That's only because I have less to say about baking, so I have to say something. Do you make a spreadsheet? How many times do you watch each episode to feel that you have a command of what happened? I definitely make a beautiful, beautiful spreadsheet, which just spreads it out very nicely for me.
Well, I don't have a spreadsheet. I have a little sort of table where I put the bakers each week. I watch it once, twice if I have the time, but I do stop and start a lot so that I can write down what all the ingredients are and the comments. So it probably takes me a good couple of hours, maybe 2.5 hours to watch an episode and write notes as I go along. Because we're doing it as soon as we can after the episode has been shown so that we can get it out fresh and the poor old editor's bashing away really quickly to get it out there. I sometimes only watch it once. What I do find, though, is all this stopping and starting and writing notes takes a little bit of the enjoyment away for me, because I feel this, you know, it's just sit down and watch it and enjoy it, and then to sit down and have to write notes, it just takes a little bit of the relaxation and enjoyment out of it for
me. Do you find, Jane, as well, sometimes that you are so kind of enthralled by a particular bit, you've forgotten to make notes. You get kind of carried away. Yeah. Yes. You think, oh, I wasn't supposed to be watching this just for enjoyment. I need to go back now and make some notes. Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
Stop enjoying it, Howard. We have work to do.
Stop enjoying the programme. You're ruining it. Yeah.
In an ideal world, you'd watch it, then you'd go back and watch it again and make notes. But I don't always have time, to be honest.
No, I'm similar. I tend to just watch it once because I don't have the time to enjoy it and then make all the notes. But I do try and write down what everything's doing, just because I feel like if we're going to be commenting on the bakers, I feel a responsibility to make sure that we actually know what they baked and what flavours they put in it before we start critiquing them. So I feel like it's only fair to the bakers that we actually know what they did. And, you know, on the odd occasion, I don't write everything down. Luckily, someone else has probably remembered. But, you know, it's, you know, if we're going to be critiquing people, I think it's, you know, we better know what we're talking about first.
Mm. Well, I mean, I've got to say all credit to Sarah, because she prompts us. So if we've missed something,
she does.
She has been much more thorough in her watching. So she should come first when people ask a question to Sarah and team, because she keeps us under control.
Aw, thanks, guys. No, it's nice to pick up things that I think you three might be able to talk about, things that I, as a viewer and a non-professional baker, would question and say, why is that happening? So it's good for me to watch it and make notes to bring up questions for you three.
Well, I think it's actually very easy for us to critique the bakers, because we are bakers and we're always critiquing everything that we're doing, aren't we? You know, where every time we finish our own bakes, we're looking at them and thinking, oh, the flavours didn't quite work. The technique of that wasn't right. Like, oh, that's a bit underproved. You know, we're always critiquing our own work. So we're sort of experts at looking at bakes and deciding what's wrong with them.
And a second part to Erin's question, which is something I'm very much going to enjoy hearing the response from you three. As Americans are endlessly fascinated with British accents, how do the four of you sound to one another? I absolutely love that. Well, I know that Jane and Dan like to take the mick out of Howard's South Yorkshire accent occasionally.
Oh, no.
There we go. There we go. But Howard, your Yorkshire accent's much stronger than mine.
Do you think?
Even though I'm more northern than you, technically.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've got a telephone voice as well, though. I turn it on and off occasionally. So, yeah.
Howard, do you think those two sound really posh?
I don't know. I don't know whether I'm just used to now them as Dan and Jane, and I don't think, oh, yes, you
don't
are.
Think of their accents.
Yeah, I don't think of their accents. It's just their voice. So, yeah. But I'm horrified to think that mine's like very, very flat.
I sort of view Howard and Sarah like sort of Victorian factory workers.
Yeah. yeah.
And
thank you, Jane, sir.
Indeed. And I view Jane as a sort of disapproving elderly aunt. That's very much the vibe. No.
Oh, God.
Regional accents are a fun thing, but I think the ages of sort of judging people based on their accent are long gone. And in fact, in the UK, people with regional accents are often seen as being like more friendly than someone with a generic English accent. So you'll often get people like to hear like a northern accent, you know, a sort of friendly northern accent. And Scottish accents are very friendly as well, aren't they?
Apparently.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
people like a Scottish accent, as long as they're not too strong, because otherwise you can't understand what
they've
got to
be intelligible, obviously, yes. It's when they're really thick, you're like, what? Even when a really thick Scottish accent, even English people struggle to understand, so I fear for the Americans. But no, we don't look at people differently because they speak differently. That's not really a thing.
Well, it used to be, though. When you listen to old radio and television broadcasts, when everybody's going, and now here we are on the BBC, and they really did talk like that. They were and it's so hilarious. They did.
Oh, yes.
So even the Queen, God rest her soul, sort of modified her accent as the years went on.
But it's actually a really good point bringing up accents on Bake Off, because we've heard such a variety of accents. And it's nice, I think, for other people to realise how many accents we have just in Britain. I mean, you take out Scotland, Ireland and Wales, just in England, the amount of accents. I mean, Dan, even then you just said northern. It's like the amount of northern accents there are from the north of the country. There are so many.
Liverpool to Manchester, so close geographically and sound completely different.
So different.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Newcastle, you've got Cumbria, you've got different parts of Yorkshire. Oh, so many. So, yes. And another part of Erin's question here is, at any point in your lives, have you ever tried to modify your accents, maybe for being on the show at all? And what was it like to hear yourself speaking on the show?
Well, I'll tell you a story. So I grew up in Berkshire, and my family speak in a relatively, you know, for the area, a relatively posh way. But I went to quite a rough school, so I had to have sort of two accents. I had to have like a, you know, the accent that we used at home, and then I used to sort of talk in a more street manner for interactions with other youths. So now I have a weird accent that's sort of halfway between sort of, you know, a nice middle-class Southern accent, and occasionally I drop letters and speak in a more Reading accent. So, I don't know. I think we pick up a little intonations and inflections from the spaces that we move in. So, yeah, my accent is a bit all over the place. Sometimes I sound very posh and sometimes I sound very working class. It just sort of depends. And, you know, we all have a speaking to a mechanic voice, don't we? Where we all like to sound like we know how to build a car.
Yeah.
Do you?
Not you, Howard. I don't know what's wrong with it, mate. You know, like that sort of thing. That's what that's
And as Howard said, we've definitely all got a telephone voice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Howard's actually, Howard does, every now and then you really posh it up with your inflection. It's quite funny.
Do I?
Yes, oh, sometimes. Right.
I tell you what, when I've had a drink as well, I do that thing where if I'm talking to someone, I start to pick up their accent.
Yes.
That's awful. Yeah.
Oh, I do that.
Australian ones are the worst because you start going up at the end of the sentences.
Oh, yeah.
And that's very easy to copy. it's all good fun, I think. My husband is particularly good or bad at changing his accent depending on who he's speaking to on the phone. It's very fun. He's from South London, by birth, and it's very funny to hear him drop back into South London. It's also, so my daughter speaks very similarly to me, and when she went off to university, she was in Leeds, actually. Leeds apparently is a very posh university, and the poshos used to say that she'd got a right South London accent, which she really hasn't got, but clearly they spotted that she was not one of them.
Oh.
I think that's what happens with accents, isn't it? It used to, not so much anymore, fortunately. It used to mark you out as not being part of the in crowd.
Yeah.
You could tell from the accent, and I think that's horrible. Luckily, on the BBC now, they have all different accents from all over the place, which I really like. I really like to see the diversity now, because we really ought to be more multicultural and multi-accented and things.
Indeed.
A good way forward.
Well, excellent. Thank you very much, everybody, for all your lovely, lovely questions. I think we've covered nearly all of them. Unfortunately, we are coming to the end of this episode now, but there is just enough time to talk about a few more classes that we have at Bake with a Legend. So we've chatted about the Bake Off. We've all watched 10 weeks of fantastic baking. And now it's time for you guys to come and join us in the new year for some new classes. We have some wonderful classes. We have Howard's Beautiful Spiced Swedish Buns class, as well as Karen's Sakertort, if anybody fancies something very, very European. And we also have Dan's Conchas, Apple Crumble Conchas, and Dobos Tort. So if you've missed any bakes this year and would like to go back and revisit them, we have those as well. We also have Jane's Mini Mocha Charlottes, as well as her fantastic picnic pies. And if you're after something a little more classic and maybe a bit simpler, if you're maybe a bit new to baking and you just want to try something a little simpler, we have Howard's Beautiful Lemon Drizzle Cake as well.
Oh, nice.
Not meant offensively, Howard.
If you want something simple, we have Howard.
We have Howard.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna stop now. But those are the classes all throughout January. We have a class every Saturday and Sunday in January, all at 5 p.m. UK time. So do head on over to the website, go to bakewithalegend.com and go to our online classes section. And don't forget, you can get 10% off your next booking with the code PODCAST. And look out for some new classes that we have in February as well.
Yeah, we're going to be doing some chocolate tempering, guys. You asked, and we are going to be doing some chocolate tempering.
We are. So if you want to make some fantastic tempered chocolates with Jane, for a Valentine in your life, or maybe just for a treat for yourself, that's also fine, then do come along to Jane's class. Keep your eyes peeled for that new announcement. So yes, we hope to see you at a Bake with a Legend class very, very soon with one of our fantastic bakers. And until the Christmas episodes, Jane, Dan and Howard, thank you so much for joining me. And we will see you all very soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
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 even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.